happy Wednesday, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Transportation and Logistics Podcast, powered by Atlanta Dispatch. I am very excited to be here. We have a very special guest who is Ms. Christina McCoy, who is the Senior Healthcare Quality Lead for DSV Global Transport and Logistics. And before we begin, I just wanted to say the Dispatcher's Guide to the Galaxy is available now as an ebook and a physical book. You can acquire your copy online from barnesandnobles.com or Amazon, or if you wanted to get an ebook, you can go to Apple or any other place that you would get your ebooks. Christina, you and I had the opportunity to meet at the grand opening of the Scaly office in the Midtown Atlanta area. And for those who are wondering, Scaly stands for the Supply Chain and Logistics Innovation Center. Let's just say center. And in a soft market like we're in right now, we talk about it all the time. You have to hear about it. How critical is it to put yourself in those type of environments where you can network with other supply chain professionals, you know, speaking specifically to truckers and fleet owners and those type of folks?
For sure. No, that's a great question. I think over the last few years, as we've seen a boom in the industry, it was sort of, one for all kind of deal, because you could be independent and make enough money and be successful. And now with how the market is in a soft market, we do have to collaborate. You need to know who is around you doing the things that you're doing, because, I mean, now more than ever, it's important to be working together and collaborating, because there are some huge issues that we need to solve in supply chain, and we're not going to do it alone.
I hear you.
Yeah. So for me, I think it's the most important time to be social and to network during these soft markets.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more, actually. And, let's just talk about it. You know, I'm very, again, thank you so much for accepting my invitation to join me here on the podcast. How did you get into logistics? For those who might not have heard about you in the past, how did you find your way into logistics? Did you go to school for it? Is it something you stumbled into? How'd you get into it?
So no, I did not go to school for anything relating to supply chain or logistics. I have a degree in biblical studies and linguistics. I have a background in nonprofit work and community engagement. I call it people moving. So it was always logistics, just a different kind of logistics. I worked with HIV and AIDS nonprofits in Baltimore for about 7 years, and just really enjoyed my time, working in that community. But nonprofit being the operative word, I was not making enough money to pay my bills. So I started working at a furniture company that had about 7 locations, and I became their logistics coordinator. And I just fell in love with it. As a lot of us do, I've moved around a little bit between companies, but I've always had really niche sort of specialties, which has been really fun for me. So I'm happy that I ended up here, but I think like a lot of us, I don't really know how I got here.
No, that's 100%. I hear you. Even myself, I went to school for IT. I did not expect to be in the supply chain. I even had some early stints in my career, in my professional life, in supply chain. I still didn't think that it was going to be for me until I had a situation where I was in big law. And while the money was okay, it was the stuffiest environment I could ever imagine, being stressed, and, they're supposed to be helping folks run their law firm, but they're partners. So, it was a lot. And, thank God I did find supply chain by working for an industrial supplier who taught me the game, similar to, your experience. I got put on the ground level, and it really just opened my eyes, and I've met so many amazing people in this industry since that, that's why I'm so dedicated to, helping as much as I possibly can, just because, we're all people, we're down to earth in the logistics. So again, thank you so much for joining. And, for the folks who, again, just like you, just like myself, I didn't go to school for supply chain, but I fell into it. For those folks who are interested in starting their career, you know, whether it be in the furniture side of things, mm-hmm. or I think you even have some experience in cold chain. Yes. You know, what would be some of the wisdom, some of the nuggets that you might be able to drop to help them navigate, you know, their entry into the market?
So I think my top piece of advice would be never have the attitude of something not being your job or having it be below you. Because in this world, I think it's really beneficial to know how to do everything. Look, I can drive a forklift. I know how to load a truck and plan a load. I also can handle compliance. You know, I have asked a lot of questions. I have inserted myself into challenges, and I've never thought anything was below me, because in order to work in supply chain, you have to remember that everybody has an integral part in making it work. It's a chain for a reason, you know? So from the, I think, understanding what does a forklift operator have to think about when he's loading a truck then helps you when you're writing, you know, policy for a large company, because you know on the ground level what's happening.
Right. Man, yeah. That's great. That's a great gem right there. And you're right. It's a supply chain. Everything is interrelated. And you being a forklift driver yesterday can help you become the load planner tomorrow, for yes. sure. No, mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing it. And, you know, according to Transport Topics, okay, mm-hmm. DSV is North America's 7th largest logistics provider, which means you guys are moving a lot of freight. I mean, a lot of it. Masters of the craft, even. How did you find your role as compliance lead for the farmer department?
So my experience with DSV has been wonderful. You know, I can't speak on the whole company, but for me, you know, it's been an encouraging place to work, because this sort of pharmaceutical program within North America didn't really exist 2 years ago when I started. So we were building this together over the last couple of years. So that's really how I got here. There was a need and I wanted to do it. And so I just did it, and everything else kind of followed. It was not a position that existed when I started, you know, so it's been really awesome to see the growth and development.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I love it. And I can recall just from us having conversations that you were voluntold by a pretty cool dude. You know, he's a pretty cool guy, but he said, uh-huh. no, this is going to be you. And, you know, I know that you can do some wonderful things mm-hmm. in pharma compliance, you know. So now, at what point do you feel like pharma compliance was a really good fit for you just as a person and just your, you know, your work style?
Well, I handle more than just the compliance, which I love. You know, I'm doing training. I'm interacting with operational teams as well. We're creating policies and documents and developing business. So what I love is that I think probably like a lot of you, I have two parts to me. I can be very creative and outgoing and engaging, but I also like to go into a hole and dig into Excel sheets, you know, for a couple hours at a time. I need that balance. And for me, the role that I have really offered that balance, like nothing else that I've had in my past. So that's, I think it probably clicked, honestly, Jory, about a year into me doing it. I was like, hey, I'm pretty good at this and I like it, you know, but it took a while.
Right. No, yeah. I hear you. And it's cool to talk about it, to even think about it. When you imagine how my face kind of lit up when you said, mm-hmm. you know, head of pharma, you know what I mean? It sounds real spicy, but at the same time, yeah. it can sound like, oh man, is it fun or is it going to be, you know, a snooze fest? But no, you definitely said it's both sides. You have the ability to, you know, be on the cutting edge of something that evokes a lot of feelings, but you are also doing other things to support your team members. And what does that really look like as the head of compliance? I know are you creating all type of SOPs? How is that looking like on the day to day?
Yeah. So, I mean, There's a few different ways to answer that question. Honestly, there really is not one day that looks like another day. I just this week, I've had to do a project on an actual reefer trailer outside, hands-on. I've done training. I've done an audit or two, you know. So my days don't ever really look, you know, the same, which I also really kind of thrive on and I appreciate. You know, that being said, yes, I'm implementing it, writing and implementing and training on a lot of processes. You know, sometimes I have to deal with the bad side of things with nonconformities and just making sure that everything is in compliance and that we are protected and that our business partners are protected. And I will say, you know, it's a heavy job because I care about people. So at every step along the way, every policy I'm writing or whatever I'm doing, I have to think about the final client, right? The customer who's going to be getting these pharmaceuticals. And it's my responsibility to make sure that we don't mess it up. So my days are very variable and heavy, but also exciting, I guess, is how I'm going to answer that.
No, nice. Just being around the scene for quite some time now, carrier to handle the responsibility of transporting pharmaceuticals to you, you know, now that you're in this space, you are head of pharma compliance. What is the mentality of the ideal motor carrier for you guys to partner with on these pharma transportation opportunities?
So I would say that it really depends on the size of the company. For smaller companies under 100 trucks, I would say, just being willing to be flexible, being willing to put in the legwork and let us walk you through the process of onboarding with us, that's the right attitude to have. For larger companies, I would say they just really need, you know, an established quality management system. I mean, it's critical. So smaller companies, we can kind of walk them through the process, but I think flexibility and a willingness to invest a little bit goes a really long way for those small to mid-sized companies.
Okay. I mean, well, you said a small trucking company having 100 units, you know, as a individual person, you know, I think that person thinks that they're hitting, you know what I mean?
I know.
Right, right. And it's crazy how, you know, things are classified, especially even what it considers to be a small business. But let me ask this. This is kind of random. Is there like an ideal size carrier where you know that it at least you get the benefit of having put in the work of, you know, getting them up to speed on what you guys need?
Yeah, I mean, I could kind of tell you a case study on my favorite carrier that we have approved. You know, this is a carrier that had not operated in the pharma space. We built a quality management system with him. It's one guy. He started out with 10 trucks. He's been willing and able to invest the time for licensing, money for licensing, training that he needs to do. He built an entire quality management system based off of our guideline. And that was 2 years ago. He's since purchased 10 more trucks. He has broken into not only over the road, but drayage to help us out as well. So for me, you know, that's my ideal carrier, is somebody willing to grow with us. And the most important thing is in this world to me is trust and communication. And he's done an excellent job of that. But it took it took about 6 months to get him approved.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. And I love it. You know, it's not necessarily somebody that has a million units to throw at it. It's really it's that mentality. It goes back to the mentality, the person that is willing to put in the work and invest into themselves. And, you know, just to give a baseline for people who've never moved a shipment of pharmaceuticals, they're not always requiring the full space of a 53-foot dry van or reefer. And as far as weight goes, they're typically some of the lightest loads you can actually, which makes me ask, how can cargo vans and other vehicles that work in the expedite world get into the pharma transportation sector? Because I'm not going to lie to you, other industries, they really don't give the respect to the expedited world. And, it, you know, to specialize, to become a niche, you know, to really become an expert in something, pharmaceutical transports.
Yeah, great question. I would say the right space for that type of carrier would be within the airline transport world. So step one would be getting approved and as a TSA approved carrier, which is a pretty simple process, and it's not very expensive to do. It just requires a little bit of work online and some short training. And then you can actually move pharmaceuticals. So when we fly pharmaceuticals, we fly them on these RAPs and RKNs. They're basically like shrunken ocean containers with their own refrigeration unit attached. And those can travel on a dry van up to 2 hours. So most places that are screening cargo for TSA are within, you know, a 5 mile radius of the airport. And that would be a really good space to get into, just running that pharmaceutical freight from point A to point B, or from the airport, you know, back to the warehouse if it's an import situation. That would be, I think, the simplest way to get involved. But at the same time, if you've got refrigerated, you know, box trucks or Sprinter, we have a great need for that as well in this world, because you're right. Usually it's one or two pallets. It is pretty rare that we have an entire truckload of pharmaceuticals just for value reasons alone. So there's a lot of ways to play in the space for sure.
Is there any specific actionable? I know. All right. So we got become TSA certified. Check. Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's important so that you can go straight up to that plane. If you need to drop something off, people don't have to think about you a second time. You know what I mean? You've already passed the advanced background check. So great. What about actually finding the opportunities? Like, how do you actually find them, though? Because it seems like with something being so niche, it might be a little, you know, like a needle in a haystack, maybe.
Yeah. So my advice would be, well, not only for ease of finding business, but for protection of the carrier, you know, especially if it's a smaller carrier with just a few trucks, you know, one nonconformity temp deviation could take you out completely if you're liable for the whole thing, right? So I would say trying to figure out who are the large third-party logistics companies that are handling pharma. And, you know, get in touch with them to find out what their needs are. There's a lack of certified carriers right now. And there are some legislations coming down the pipeline that are going to be enacted in September of this year, actually, that are going to make the third-party logistics companies that are not currently vetting their pharmaceutical carriers, they're going to have to start doing that a little more deeply. So they're going to be looking for those TSA approved carriers who are willing to onboard for pharma, if that makes sense. We want to get ahead of the game for sure. But I wouldn't attack, I would not go after a pharmaceutical company directly. It's or a pharmaceutical wholesale distributor even directly. It's too risky. And there's just way more liability than you can take on as a small company.
Gotcha. And look, I just posted coming up in September. You know, why do you feel like the parameters are changing? What's the point of, you know, if this law was enacted way back in 2013, yes. Like, why is it important to start enforcing it now?
Well, I think it was important in 2013, frankly. But, you know, here we are, and we all know how the government does like to take its time. Actually doing anything. So I think that's why we haven't seen it enacted. It's not that there wasn't a need. I just think it got put pushed to the wayside. I think it came back to light due to the supply chain issues that we're having just as a nation right now, and the issues that we're having in particular with trade with China. So it's topical, and I think that they felt like they would have more public support for implementing. I'm actually excited about this. I've read it through a few times because, legislation is not easy to digest. I'll say that.
Right.
But I like it because it's regulating the industry a little more. You know, what I do is so important in the States because we don't regulate our pharmaceutical suppliers from wholesale distributors, all the way to manufacturers, you know, and then third party logistics companies as well. So to me, this is a regulation. It's a small step in the right direction. What's changing really is going to be the requirements for vetting of the carriers. There's going to be more licensing requirements. There's even proposed in there that the states could start regulating who can and cannot distribute these pharmaceuticals. So for me, the act read as an encouraging, like, step in the right direction, and it basically protects us as the people who touch it at the end of the line. You know, we are a little more protected because everybody before we got it in the supply chain will be documenting a little more thoroughly. They have to approve all of their business partners from, whoever manufactures the gel tabs has to be an approved manufacturer. And then all of the parts of the drug will now be tracked from origin all the way to final destination. Whereas before, you know, we have the bill of lading, but the documentation that goes with it is not very thorough. So I think that third-party logistics companies are going to have a shock in September, probably October, November is when they're going to start really digging into who you're using as your carriers. And for me, you know, I'm lucky. It doesn't really impact what we're doing at all because we're already adhering to European standards for how we handle our freight. So I am nervous for what it's going to mean for the full supply chain once it's put into effect.
So basically you're saying that the Drug Quality and Security Act is adopting some of the World Health Organization standards? Is that what we're saying?
I'm sure they wouldn't like admit that, you know, if you talk to the person who read it, but having read both, they read really similarly. And I think the main takeaway is we're going to have to start vetting our carriers, if we're not already doing it, as brokers. And then we're also going to get more paperwork and understand really where the stuff that we're hauling is coming from and whether or not it's dangerous. You know, I think that's an important thing as well.
Right, right. All right. So cool. Got it. 3PLs, brokers definitely got to do more vetting up front. And there's going to be a lot more paper trail to make sure that everybody in this chain is compliant and legit. Anything changing specifically for motor carriers, like anything that they would have to be concerned with as this is becoming enforced?
So I would say that as a carrier, you know, you can make sure that you're protected by checking the paperwork, ensuring that if you're interacting during the loading, that the things are tagged correctly and individually. There's some nuances in there with the labeling that's also in the act, but I think just more awareness is the key because the carriers really aren't listed in the act. The weight of responsibility is really on the 3PL.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I definitely hear you. And it's interesting because I'm thinking about the actual enforcement. You know, the enforcement starts in September and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. And it makes me say, Is it going to be enforced the way that you would expect something to be enforced? Both carriers and freight brokers, you know, because everybody's losing money. You know, if the product is not showing up when it should and the carrier who actually did the delivering is not actually getting paid, then they're having to go back to the actual manufacturer slash shipper to try to get paid, which means now the broker is looking incompetent. So they're losing that customer. You know, it's a lot of stuff that's being affected by double brokering. And there are thousands upon thousands of complaints, you know, that have been logged with the FMCSA, and none of them have been, you know, investigated. And that's right. No knock. That's no knock to the FMCSA. I know it's a lot of work. I know it's a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, when you hear enforcement here, do you feel like it's going to be something where they're really going to be armed and ready looking for this type of stuff?
No, absolutely not. Okay. I really don't. I think that you will see fines. You may see some fines that some, you know, larger companies will just take on the chin for a couple of years. And then I think they'll start pulling licensing based on what I read towards the end of the act. They're sort of thinking of phasing it. Well, that was their plan in 2013. So they had said that in 2015, they were going to start, you know, with the licensing, the pulling of the licensing and authorities and things like that. So I don't know. I really have no idea how that's going to play out, but I don't expect it to be like, you know, headline news or anything. I just think we may see a slowdown in the supply chain. And then that might make them ease up a little bit.
On right. Enforcement.
Yeah.
Okay. You say that for a motor carrier to be able to participate in your transportations.
Yeah. So the industry standard, when you're working with a broker, a 3PL, is 250K cargo. So, Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the main thing. But there is one small detail that gets a lot of carriers messed up on their insurance. And that is that your insurance policy has exclusions. We'll cover you, but not on these things. So sometimes they'll throw pharmaceuticals in there. So we may have a carrier that we really like and they have the 250K, but they have an exclusion they don't even know about on their policy. So they can't move for us. So I would say, you know, take a look at your policies too for that, not only for cargo limit, but for your exclusions.
Oh, great point, man. When I was covering insurance heavy, you know, at this point it was years ago, but big shout out to D Stevens. It's been a while. I know she's actually transitioned out of commercial trucking insurance, but big shout out to her because she definitely went through the ins and outs of what a carrier should look for in their commercial policy. But no, that's great. You know, those exclusions, they are there. And actually, that's something that dispatchers need to know about too, because Right. Moving freight in the spot market, you know, you think it's just something quick, you know, maybe it's a high paying load that might be a spot load. But, you know, if something goes crazy, that exclusion Yeah. Really means that they're not covered.
Well, and that's another reason that it's so good to work with a larger company that's got a compliance system. You know, as a carrier, you are so much more protected. I mean, we check everything to make sure that not only are we not liable for too much, but you're not either. Like, we don't want to put anybody out of business. I don't want to put anybody out of business, you know. So I just think it's so much safer to have that extra layer of protection.
Right. I mean, would you say it's a big investment for a motor carrier? Like, what type of investments would you say a carrier by the end of the year has to make to their fleet to make sure that they're in position to, you know, move freight for you guys?
Yeah, I would say the main expenses, the obviously refrigerated freight is more expensive to move. We all know this. For pharmaceuticals, any third-party logistics provider worth its salt will require you to qualify and temperature map your trailers. What does that mean? I'm actually doing this project right now on one of our trucks, but you have to install 20 sensors, and then you run inside of the truck at different locations and heights, and then you run the reefer unit for 2 days straight, 1 day at 6 Celsius, 1 day at 20 Celsius, and then you have a third party create a report to show hot and cold spots and that your trailer is all good, and then it's qualified and certified for pharma. That process will cost you around $3,000, so it is a bit of an investment. Another thing is, you know, you want to make sure that you've got a great GPS and temp monitoring system in your vehicle. That will make you stand out from the rest. And a new requirement that I've been getting from some European requesters is GPS on both the trailer and on the tractor. And that's just to mitigate the risk of things getting stolen a lot right now, frankly. So I would say maybe a $4,000 investment to get off the ground, plus the time.
But, uh-huh. You know, if we're talking about being able to specialize in a very, very segmented part of the transportation industry where you can definitely charge higher amounts for your actual services, uh-huh. I think that that's a good investment up front, having that certification that your vehicles meet those certain, protocols. Everybody's not going to be able to do that, which means that you're probably setting yourself up for more business due to not many people being able to qualify to do the business in the first
place. Absolutely. Yep. That's exactly what you're doing. And I think that's in this economy, that's where you have to be.
You have to be there. No, I definitely hear you. Okay. And you know, when it comes to you and somebody who does get the ability to get onboarded, they have the $250K of insurance, and they don't have the exclusion of pharmaceuticals on their commercial insurance policy. What does it mean for you to partner up with them, you know, to really lock in with the carrier? What can they expect, especially due to just there not being that much freight around, mm-hmm. you know? How is it different with you?
Well, I want to say, you know, a little bit of a correction. There is not a lot of gen cargo freight, but the pharmaceutical supply chain is heavy and moving and busy. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. There is a lot, but the capacity to handle is really low. It's not posted on load boards. You know, it's not. It's you're not going to find it anywhere. You really have to kind of already be in the industry to have access to be able to move that freight or get in contact with a company that is already heavily involved in pharma distribution. You know, that being said, the way that I like to handle my business partners and carriers is, you know, I view it all like a long-term relationship. We don't like to ad hoc quote stuff. We like to do big projects together because, like I said, you know, there is a lot of freight available. So we may have, you know, a regular client with 3 loads a week from A to B, and we just need one of our business partners to fill that need and just be dedicated to that. So we do a lot of dedicated planning and business planning with our business partners. They're not treated like just another carrier that we're brokering to. You know, it's regular scheduled freight, which also protects us because it's just easier when it's routine, right? So we like to do more dedicated for sure.
Gotcha. And I guess just thinking about the regulations that we just talked about, mm-hmm. and your carrier partners, Do you feel like, will your carrier partners be able to do the lease on model where they allow owner operators to run under their authority, or will you guys, or do you guys kind of like prioritize fleets consisting only of the company drivers? Like, what do you think when it comes to farmer loads?
So overall, as an industry, the preference is for asset-based carriers. However, in the current market, in the way that the U.S. is set up, as far as our trucking industry goes, it is an absolute necessity that you work with owner operators as well. As long as they're under the authority of the company that I've audited and that we've vetted and we know has that insurance that we talked about earlier, then owner operators are not a problem for us. And I, you know, I can't speak for the rest of my 3PL counterparts at different companies, but I would assume that they're in the same boat. It's not as risky as a brokerage situation, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned this, the fact that there is higher risk when it comes to a pharmaceutical load, you know, just mm-hmm. the fact that people might be more inclined to try to take that bad boy. And I recently had the ability to interview Tithe Incorporated.
Oh, awesome. I use Tithe. I love Tithe.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I was going to ask, mm-hmm. is that something that you guys like feel like that type of service incorporated yes. into your freight movements? You know, it kind of beefs up your security?
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't work for Tithe. I'm not a spokesperson for Tithe. But let me tell you, that to me is such a great value add for our clients. You know, it's a low cost way to make sure that your stuff is all right. They even have stickers, you know, that can track if you don't want the bulk of the tracker. So yes, absolutely. That is something that we do, you know, regardless of if the trailer and the tractor have GPS, we want something inside of that unit as well, because it lets us know about shock absorption and things like that. So we would be alerted if there was an accident before, you know, the dispatcher of the carrier were to give us a call. So to me, things like that and innovative technologies are really going to be the future of the industry. And, you know, it's like one of those things, you got to get on board now or you're going to get left behind. So yes, absolutely. We love Tithe. And
Oh, that's pretty awesome. I forgot that you guys, you know, that was even a thing there. But what I found out was they even have the light sensors, you know what I mean? They can see if the trailer door has been opened before mm-hmm. it needs to. And so I thought that was pretty dope, because I can only imagine, man, you guys, it's probably a lot of fraud attempts. I mean, have you personally mm-hmm. ever had to worry about a booster trying to flood the market with some stolen penicillin or something like that? Have you ever thought about it?
Oh, I mean, this is what keeps me up at night, Jory. You know, I have a kid. I think about what goes into her body, medicine wise, food wise, all the time. Right. So yeah, I worry about it. I worry about the lack of regulation, and it's something I think about on almost daily basis, as I really dig into what our policies are here in the U.S. We should all, as consumers here, want this act that's being passed and more regulation, because we are not nearly as protected as we should be right now. And if you think you are, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you, but you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is the sad truth. That is the unfortunate truth. I was just having a conversation with my wife about this, about us being raised in a time when our parents didn't have a reason not to trust big brands and, mm-hmm. you know, all this type of stuff. But now, once you actually do a couple deep dives, you see right. that it's all types of mess in the things that we've normalized. So mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think that it's important what you're doing, breaking down those high level concepts into understandable guidelines. You're building those SOPs like we talked about, left and right. And, you know, what does that really look like to make sure that your team members are up to speed? Like, how are you, like, what does a training program look like when you are empowering the other offices to add Farmer Freight to their U.S. ground transportation portfolio?
No, that's a great question also. There's actually about a 4-month process for one of our branches to become certified in pharmaceuticals. So, you know, there's a whole process of training and, discussion, policy review, practical application, you know, so, a lot of it is done just virtually because obviously we have offices all over. But then with the structure, you know, it's sort of a top down, like I've got some leads that are supposed to be communicating things to their local and their local offices. And then really the key is just training records and making sure that you have your, basically your finger on the heartbeat of the business. And you also have to do self-inspections and audits on a regular basis to make sure that the documentation that you're getting is for real. So I think that, you know, the self-inspections are kind of the key to me knowing what's actually happening at a branch level.
To always be audit ready. Mm-hmm. That's most important. You got to make sure that the paperwork lines up and that you've built in that redundancy to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It's easy to skip over steps that you might feel are drags or time sucks, but the whole point is just making sure that you're doing it right the first time and following right. with doing it right. So yeah, no, I appreciate you for that answer. In your opinion, before we close out, why do you feel like now is the time to make the jump over to pharma if someone was ever considering it as a broker or as a motor carrier? Why is now the time to make that move?
Well, look, you know, like we've, there's so many different reasons. It's a soft market, so specializing is really important right now. Take advantage of the downtime you have, invest in your business, and then do something better than you were doing before. I think that's the key right there. That's the main answer. At the same time, the market is going to get tighter because I do believe that once this Supply Chain Act is actually enforced, it's going to hit a lot of people like a ton of bricks, and their capacity is going to go way, way down for approved carriers. So you would stand out and be ready and already, you know, have checked the boxes you need to check.
First off, thank you so much. I truly appreciate you for joining me here to talk about pharma compliance and, you know, your role with DSV. Is there anything that we did not talk about that maybe is relevant to what's happening now in the industry or anything like that? This is, you know, let me know.
Well, I do think, you know, we are going to see a very large shift soon. Away from China supplying our pharmaceuticals. We will be seeing a lot more moving through Mexico up into the US. So like through South America and up through Mexico. So if you're thinking about getting into this space, it may be a really good idea to go ahead and get your certifications so you can cross the border. I think that's going to be kind of the next phase of where this market is headed. So that's the only thing I would bring up as a tip, you know, just stay aware of political events because this industry in particular is very impacted.
Right. No, that's a great piece of information right there. And we talk about it all the time, actually, just the idea of nearshoring, how so many more opportunities are coming in and out of Mexico, not so much Canada. Canada, right. You might have your whatever type of business, but it's not booming right now like Mexico is. Yeah. And I think, what was that, Volkswagen? I think Volkswagen just announced that they're going to be opening a facility in Canada. But, you know, that's good for Canada for that.
Yeah, Volkswagen and maple syrup.
right. But yeah, no, Mexico is hitting right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so no, I think that's great advice right there. Is there any way that folks can contact you if they had any questions, if they wanted to get onboarded if they wanted to be a part? How would they reach out to you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, I am on LinkedIn. Feel free to send me a message. My name on there is Christina Pelhank McCoy. I've got my Instagram listed on the flyer too, and I will answer you there as well. So, you know, I would love to get some feedback and some people that want to learn about the process. I would love to talk with them.
Okay. Well, bet. Well, I truly appreciate you for joining me here. It's been a pleasure since I met you. You definitely just been pouring into my life. So I say thank you. And everybody, appreciate the support. I would say also tune in on Monday, 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we partner up with FreightWaves Sonar Team. We're going to be giving you the game on where you should position your trucks to take advantage of the market. And next week, our conversation is going to be a little bit different. You know, this fella, he's created a new way of getting paid as a carrier. It's supposed to be all the benefits of a factoring company, but you don't have that hefty factoring fee. So we're going to be talking next week with Truck Coin Swap, who has integrated blockchain with, you know, getting paid as a carrier. So I'm excited to talk to that brother. But again, Christina, thank you so much, and yes, you have a blessed one.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate you having me, Jory.
Anytime.